Welcome back, everyone, to another exciting week at the Damage Report with me, John Adirola, and Brooke Thomas as well.
I'm here. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. Glad to have you here.
Yeah, we've glad
got
to be
a
here.
Full
Happy
show. Lots to get to. Probably, let's keep it real. Probably not going to get to all of it because there's just too much. But we've got another high-ranking Trump official is gone. We're going to break that down. And we're going to look back over what she achieved in her time in government service. That should be fun. Let's see, we've got two awesome guests. We're going to be breaking down possible new immigration czar and all the reasons we should be a little bit worried about what that individual might do in that role. So Greg Palast is going to be joining us later on to break that down. And then voter ID. What's the big deal? Just get the ID, right?
No, well, biggie.
Sometimes not so easy. And so Kat Calvin, an activist, is going to join us to break down the difficulties that she and a group of people had in getting IDs for people.
A great demonstration.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And so we'll be talking about that too. Oh, plus Ilhan Omar targeted with death threats and then attacked immediately after by, well, you'll see in the C block. So why don't we jump right into it? So much to get to. Kristen Nielsen is out. She didn't make it through the weekend, and she joins the long, ever-growing list of Trump officials who last, 10 days or 6 months or maybe 1 year, and then they transition out. And so she sent a letter announcing her resignation. Of course, the first indication we got of it was not a resignation letter, as is traditional. It was a tweet from Donald Trump. She wasn't given the respect to be able to announce her own resignation. He fired her on Twitter. So this is what she said once we made it through Twitter, though. She said, "I have determined that it is the right time for me to step aside. I hope that the next secretary will have the support of Congress and the courts in fixing the laws which have impeded our ability to fully secure America's borders and which have contributed to discord and our nation's discourse." So even in her firing, and we'll break down how that came about, she is very much sticking with Donald Trump. Like, she's being pushed out effectively because she wouldn't give him enough of what he wanted. Mm-hmm. But even in her firing, she's implying that the big issue is not that he has impossible asks on the border, because what he wants to happen there has no relationship with what's actually going on vis-a-vis American immigration and our government. She's saying it's Congress and the courts, they have broken the immigration system, and that is why she hopes, she's stepping down, but she hopes that they will reform in the future.
So, I mean, you only have two options after you put children in cages, basically. You know, mm-hmm. You on one hand have the president who doesn't like you anymore, even after you did his dirty work, which I don't believe that it's even fair to call it his dirty work, because I think you have to be a certain type of person to even sign your name to that. Mm-hmm. So you know what I mean?
We're going to talk about her legacy in a little bit.
Right. So you either support the man who no longer likes you, or you go over here where, with basic humanity, where no one has any time for you. So it's like her only hope is to just try and kiss up.
Yeah, and
it's the only possible side that will accept her.
Exactly. She could try to make amends in some way, and I'm sure she'll write a book at some point where she will pitch herself as I was behind the scenes, I was working, I was trying to make things better. But on her way out, there's no apologies. We would have gone even farther, but the legislature and the courts screwed us over. That's what I'm getting out of her. So how did this resignation come about? Well, she had a meeting a few days ago with Donald Trump. And she'd requested the meeting, quote, to plan a way forward at the border, in part thinking, I love this sentence because it's so naive. In part thinking she could have a reasoned conversation with Mr. Trump about the, don't finish the sentence, about anything. It's impossible, it's not gonna happen. So she thought she could reason with Trump on the border and immigration. Of all the things, that's probably gonna be the hardest. She came prepared with a list of things that needed to change to improve the relationship with the president. But despite this meeting and several stories that recently she had been, her working relationship with Donald Trump had apparently been improving, she never learned how to manage him, which puts her in company with everyone else in the world. Nobody knows how to manage him. He often felt lectured to by Ms. Nielsen. I bet he felt lectured to quite a bit by a lot of people throughout his life, particularly women. I don't think he likes people lording it over him that they know. You could say either more about him.
That 2 + 2 = 4.
Yeah, that they know anything.
Right.
Okay. He doesn't like that. Mm-hmm. He goes with his gut instead. And so you can only last so long in a role like that. If you, she is an ideologue, obviously, and her position on all these issues, as we're going to break down, is reprehensible as well. But she thought, I actually care what's going on. I have a reasoned policy. I'm going to break it down to him. Who do you think you're working with? She doesn't know Donald Trump after all this time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she is apparently out. Now, that's not even necessarily the biggest news. I mean, she's out. There's this big power struggle going on about who is going to succeed her at the Department of Homeland Security. Apparently, he has someone in mind, but there is actually a line of succession. And so to get the person that Trump wants, they have to fire somebody else who says that they have no intention of stepping down. So there's gonna be even more bloodshed in all of this before he gets who he wants. But it adds to the list of government agencies that are operating with only acting secretaries, including the Department of Defense. They no longer, like, it's like in the past, you go through Congress, you put your person forward, they testify, they're asked questions. It's generally a formality. You generally get whoever you want anyway, especially when your party still controls the Senate. But at least they have to explain themselves briefly before the country. They have decided apparently that they're not going to do that going forward. They will have acting secretaries. They won't actually try to confirm anyone anymore. And so another sort of plank of democracy has just fallen by the wayside.
Right.
Yeah. And so let's go to a potentially even bigger news here. So she's out, obviously, that's big news. But apparently, the policy that she has rightfully received the most criticism for throughout her time in government and will continue to, both for the rest of her life and also for the rest of this block, as we're going to continue to talk about her.
Yeah.
Family separation is gone, sort of. I mean, we're still feeling the effects of it, but he apparently is looking to bring it back.
Right.
He's apparently for months urged his administration to reinstate large-scale separation of migrant families crossing the border. According to three US officials with knowledge of meetings at the White House, he's been pushing this policy since January. Maybe, this is probably being more charitable than we should even be, but maybe she has been cautioning against that, considering the strike back from the media and activists and all of that. The fact that it obviously hurt them in the last the midterm elections. But he has been, since he lost control of the House, I don't think that's a coincidence, it started in January. He's been pushing, you know what, let's go back to possibly the worst policy we've had during his time as president.
And also, I think that it's important, there's no honor in her position on this. And it seems like, as the NBC report that broke this morning, that was the final straw between the two of them. Like, he wants to bring it back, and she's pointing out how ridiculous it would be for him to rescind his own executive order that was really just for show anyway. Mm-hmm. But not that, because before any of this ever happened, it takes nothing to say, you know what? This is a terrible idea. This is heinous. This is disgusting. This is not how we should treat human beings. Mm-hmm. And she moved past that and has been defending this. And I think she's tired of the disgust she's getting as a response.
Mm-hmm.
Not that her position on putting children in cages has changed, but just that her willingness,
right,
to get beat up for it has changed. And so that's why I say there's no honor in it necessarily, because you don't just all of a sudden, as a grown woman, have to learn that what they all signed up for and signed on to do was terrible.
Yeah.
So I think, it appears to me at least that she's just tired of defending it, tired of being the face of this, tired of getting beat up for it.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, well then bye.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't been happy with her from jump, because that wasn't enough. That wasn't far enough for him.
She was too close to John Kelly, apparently. Apparently Jared Kushner wasn't a big fan of her. Obviously Stephen Miller, who looks like he's going to be in actuality kind of acting Secretary of Homeland Security, at least in terms of immigration, the power is going to be ceded to him.
Can we sit in that for a moment, that this is coming back?
Mm-hmm.
It's never even fully gone away.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I mean, we can almost be sure that this is in full effect coming back.
Yeah, this is what we have warned against for literally years. Mm. And it's coming back again. I mean, like you said, it never really had left. Those families remain, separated, a good number of them. So why don't we transition to that? Because you say that she's sick of being criticized for this. Kirstjen Nielsen, you better buckle up. Because if we have anything to say about it, that's the rest of your life, basically. That's the rest of your career. Kirstjen Nielsen, what is her legacy going to be? The media is sort of writing that right now in real time. And look, there are a lot of people on the mainstream media that are willing to give her the benefit of the doubt and to, this sort of rose-tinted view of what her time as head of Homeland Security was. Let's show you a video. This is going to be Fran Townsend, former Homeland Security advisor to President Bush, on TV to try to get out ahead of criticisms of Kirstjen Nielsen.
She's done her level best. I think she's worked tirelessly to you know, sort of implement the president's agenda. But it's been a tough road. She's had a difficult 16 months. She's defended policies that she at times, I think, was questioning. And so, look, she served well. I think it's a relief for her to be able to get out and move on.
Just a reminder, too, thank you, Fran, that the Secretary of Homeland Security deals with just more than just the border. Yeah. They deal with cyber threats, so many other things. So those are going to be important and come up certainly at any confirmation hearing. Fran, always good to have you.
Okay, so look, that's a very sympathetic portrayal. It was a difficult 16 months. She had to support policies that at times she didn't agree with. And then, hey, everybody, she deals with more than just the border. Why? You're getting so hung up on the kids in cages. She does cybersecurity too, because we know the US government has taken that so seriously over the past 2 years.
Seriously.
And so that is what I'm seeing on TV, though. You guys are being too hard on Kirstjen Nielsen.
Yeah, I think you have to put things in perspective, and it's almost like comical to talk about how difficult her life has been as like part of the White House administration.
Yeah.
And just in general, just not in a cage. Which
yeah,
is where
were
all
you
people,
in a cage?
Which is
that's
where
a
all
difficult
children
life.
Don't, which is where all children belong, not in a cage.
Mm-hmm.
And where, I mean, if you consider a jail cell a cage, which was a little, almost like a little different than what we saw and what we're talking about, but like where all people who haven't committed a crime mm-hmm. belong, you know what
yeah.
I mean? Not in a cage of any sort. So it's not really that difficult when you think about, when you put it in the perspective of what she did to other people,
mm-hmm.
they defended this. She was just defending this a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
We just ridiculously.
Well, let's for people who might forget some of it, let's run through some of the basic facts
okay.
of this. We'll get to the cybersecurity someday. Yes, she worked on many other things.
One day.
So she defended it for like 16 months.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, she also lied about it initially. She just said that they don't have a policy. She did that for weeks and weeks, even after it became very clear that that was the established policy that they'd been working on for literally months, that they were doing it specifically to provide a deterrent against future migrants entering the country. That was their mission. She pursued it and lied about it. Along the way, they separated thousands of families, thousands that we initially knew about
mm-hmm.
during like the big focus on this policy. We later found out months later that there were thousands more families that were separated, that they hid those numbers for as long as they could. Hundreds of families remain separated. That has been true since the policy, and there is no reason to believe they will ever be reunited. And if they are, it will be literally years until it happens. Because, don't forget, they did not set up any system for tracking these families once they were separated. They cared so little about what happened to these people that they thought, we'll track them down at some point, I guess. Why put together a list of the people? We can't be bothered. So hundreds of immigrant children remain missing. We don't know where they are.
Right.
Maybe they're in custody somewhere. Maybe they're with a family. We don't know because the system was so slipshod.
That was part of like the proud
22 immigrants
defense.
Died in custody, including multiple children died under her watch.
Right.
So no, we're not going to just move on to did she run like a good schedule or something? Like, was she a good administrator? She doesn't want to be pigeonholed as being about this policy, and she wants you to believe that behind the scenes she spoke out against it. Well, it kept going, regardless of whatever you might have said in some meeting, in some boardroom or whatever. It kept going, and you stayed there. You could have left. If you didn't want to be tarred by this, I know a really easy way that you could have not been tarred. You could have been the person who left the administration, came before the American people and said, I know what they're doing behind the scenes. You don't know about it yet, but they're going to purposefully separate these families, ruin their lives to send a message to people who might come someday later. And I am not going to stand for it. But she did stand for it. I should say she refused to stand. She just sat down and pursued the policy.
I mean, we know she knows how to do that, and she knows that that was an option because she literally did it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
She got tired of him.
Mm-hmm.
She did it yesterday.
Yeah, she should have done that 16 months
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, I agree.
And so, look, I'm sure some think tank is going to be really excited to have her join their board, or she might be she might be a commentator for CNN or something.
Maybe she'll show
That's
up on the
US
Emmy
works.
Stage. You know, we don't
maybe,
know.
Maybe.
And everyone will laugh. And
she should be a pariah.
Mm-hmm.
She has earned that. That's what she's earned over 16 months. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We come back, voter ID after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies. debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Defenders of voter ID often talk about ID as something that everybody should already have. They're shocked that everybody doesn't. And why is it so difficult to just go and get it? Well, it turns out not always so easy. And joining us now to break down how hard it can be, Kat Calvin, founder of Spread the Vote US and Project ID US. Kat, welcome to the Damage Report.
Hi, thanks. Great to be here.
Very glad to have you here. So you recently had an incident where some people were trying to get IDs and it started a very involved process. Can you break that down for us?
Sure. So at Spread the Vote, we help people get IDs in voter ID states. So like you said, most people think everyone has an ID. Actually, 11% of eligible voters in America, 21 million people don't have photo ID. Wow. And for anyone who's ever had to go to the DMV, you know it's not easy. Beyond just the insane lines, you need birth certificates and proofs of identity and residency and money. And a lot of things that are really tough, and particularly for that 11%, because if you don't have an ID, you can't work. And so on top of all of the other things you can't do with an ID, get food from a lot of food banks, nights in shelters, medical care, et cetera, you don't have the job you need to pay for those documents. So we help people pay for all of those things, obtain those documents, and take them to the DMV. We have a really incredible field staffer in Memphis, Tennessee, Chandra, who she's such a beast that sometimes I have to call her and say, "Chandra, are you making up these numbers?" Because she gets 20 to 40 IDs a week at least. And she goes to the DMV, to different DMVs around Memphis, wherever is most convenient for her clients. For a lot of them, it's the downtown motor. And I was there last week and had 18 people who she was helping. You know, she sort of goes a couple times a week and people meet her there. And I think there was a combination of her having quite a few people and being there regularly. The clerks know her, sometimes send her people who show up at their desk and don't have the money for the IDs, and they'll say, "Go talk to Chandra." I think both she had so many people who she was helping, and so of course was going sort of all over the place, and is a sort of a regular face there. And I think there was some desire by the people who run the DMV to perhaps not have so many people who are also, you know, usually people of color, a lot of Black men, and a lot of returning citizens, a lot of people who are considered undesirables for a variety of reasons. I'm showing up at the DMV on a regular basis. And so there was quite a bit of intimidation used against our staffer. And then they actually ended up kicking her out. And then it's sort of escalated from there. I'll actually be in Memphis in a couple of days to figure out what the resolution to this is, because we don't have one yet.
So, Kat, from you, you know, we were told that she was banned from the DMV in that moment. What was the initial reason? What was their reason initially before things went viral? Because I know the story has sort of shifted, and we'll get to that. But what was the initial reason why they said they didn't want her there?
We didn't get a reason until several hours later and a couple of conversations with their lawyers when they decided that she was soliciting people. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, if you think about it, why would someone go to the DMV to people in line and, you know, solicit them to help them get IDs? Like, it doesn't make sense. Initially, she was brought into, taken into a room with two employees who weren't introduced and really yelled at and told that, you know, the manager had part of us. She must be an illegal operation, that she wanted to speak to the president of the organization immediately, which I would have been happy to speak to her. And really just sort of gave her a lot of grief about the fact that she had a lot of people there and they didn't know what she was doing, so she must be illegal. And this isn't the first DMV we've had these problems with. It's the first time we've been banned, but we've had DMVs who have told our staff and volunteers, you bring too many people here, you're not allowed to come back unless you have a letter from your lawyer. We've had DMVs, we have a problem in Florida right now where a DMV has suddenly decided that only family members are allowed to buy IDs for people. And so we now have to go through this, we have to give people sort of cash or money orders, et cetera. We have DMVs quite often who decide that they don't, for whatever reason, like the fact that, I don't know, we're making them work harder. I mean, all we're doing is doing what they do. You give people IDs. We're just bringing people in to get IDs. We're not asking you to make us a pizza or build us a house. We're doing the thing you do. We've had, but you know, it's one of the things we knew when we started this was they're going to start making what we call spread the vote rules, you know, once we start being successful. And so this was the first time that we'd been banned, but it's a problem we're seeing more and more. The more successful we are around the country is that DMVs suddenly decide, wait, I'm going to come up with a reason that you can't be here.
Yeah, and your organization has been quite successful. I mean, thousands of people have gotten their IDs thanks to your tireless work, and so we very much do appreciate that. I share your fear that as more and more people run up against needing an ID and organizations like yours try to bridge that gap, that there will be more strike back against your organizations, and hopefully that can be avoided. Kat Calvin, thank you for joining us and for your organization's work.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take a short break here. We come back, a new representative targeted by death threats, and then immediately after that, targeted by some of the most high profile politicians in the country. We'll break that down after this. New Representative Ilhan Omar has found herself the target of a lot of people's ire in her couple of months as a representative. Right-wing media talks about her quite a bit. Right-wing politicians have her as one of their main punching bags. And now she's also receiving death threats. Federal prosecutors announced last Friday that a man named Patrick Carliano Jr. was arrested after placing a threatening call to her office in Washington, D.C. last month. The FBI said in a criminal complaint that Carliano called Omar a terrorist and threatened to shoot her. One quote that he said, do you work for the Muslim Brotherhood? Why are you working for her? She's an effing terrorist, this is to one of her staffers. I'll put a bullet in her effing skull. He apparently told the FBI, once they tracked him down, that he's a patriot who, quote, loves the president and that he hates radical Muslims in our government. And he is armed to do something about it. He had a 22 caliber rifle and a shotgun in his home. And he was calling representatives and threatening to assassinate them. Now, I don't find this particularly shocking.
Right, at all.
Like the right wing has been so emboldened to at least act out and in some cases start plots to assassinate people in media and politics that they have been told are their enemies or the enemies of the people. And we're going to go to a little bit of the rhetoric about Ilhan Omar in particular in just a little bit, but I want you to understand what happened immediately after this death threat. So the news of the death threat goes out, seems like serious news to me. And that same day, Donald Trump he's addressing a group, and here is what he had to say.
And a special thanks to Representative Omar of Minnesota. Oh, I forgot. She doesn't like Israel, I forgot. I'm so sorry. Oh, no, she doesn't like Israel, does she? Oh.
Okay, so they have convinced their followers that she is an anti-Semite who works with a radical terrorist organization, that she is fundamentally anti-American, hates the Constitution, is a threat to your rights and possibly your life. So they want to assassinate her, and then after finding out about that, doubles down on it and says that she hates the countries that we're supposed to love and I mean, is that going to be the last death threat that she faces, that her office faces? Imagine being one of her staffers right now, wondering if a guy is going to come barreling in through the door.
No, and it's not, because her becoming a representative and criticizing Israel and her just being a woman in power didn't begin the fear that for her safety that has probably existed since she was a child. Because I think it's this like plausible deniability thing. It's like, so when... That's why it was even more horrible when Meghan McCain started crying on The View, talking about how this black Muslim woman scares her because of comments she made. It kind of just like ignores the fact that she is black and Muslim in America. And the way that society treats Muslims didn't start with Trump's rhetoric. Do you know what I mean? And so, but it also, it pretends that he's not exacerbating it, that Jeanine Pirro isn't, you know, kind of like making it worse, like pointing out to radicals. And this is just a different sector because there's like 10 different groups of people, marginalized groups of people that the president has kind of like, we have examples of the president's words emboldening horrible, scary, terroristic people.
It's the wheel of propaganda and he spins it every day and then he targets that group. And as you pointed out, I mean, Jeanine Pirro, we're gonna play a video from her in just a second. But Tucker Carlson ranted about her last week. Laura Ingraham had a big thing about her. And Donald Trump still talking about her. And this is what, in particular, Donald Trump. Like Maxine Waters was the target of death threats. He immediately went back to attacking her. Like think about
pretending that like he didn't pick that day or that moment on purpose.
On purpose, yeah. No,
it's a way of supporting what a radical murderer would do without explicitly saying it.
Yeah, with the pipe bomber, with the Coast Guard guy. When thankfully these right wing Charlottesville too. Well, in that case, they did kill someone. In these two cases where they were thankfully stopped, he speaks out in support of their ideology every single time. And I want to show you just one clip. Jeanine Pirro, sort of leading up to all of this. This is what she had to say about Ilhan Omar.
This is not who your party is. Your party is not anti-Israel. She is. Think about this. She's not getting this anti-Israel sentiment doctrine from the Democrat Party. So if it's not rooted in the party, where is she getting it from? Think about it. Omar wears a hijab, which according to the Quran 33:59, tells women to cover so they won't get molested. Is her adherence to this Islamic doctrine indicative of her adherence to Sharia law, which in itself is antithetical to the United States Constitution?
Okay, so she, for declaring that Ilhan Omar abides by Sharia law and wants to destroy the US Constitution, fundamentally un-American, she lost her show for a week or something, maybe like 10 days, and now she's back on. And that's the sort of rhetoric that has been floating around since she became a representative. Ilhan Omar responded in a very responsible way. She's obviously scared for her life and the life of her staffers. She tweeted, "My Lord, forgive my people, for they do not know," with the attached video that we showed you of Donald Trump there. And she has received support from other representatives who are probably also facing death threats of this sort, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who said, "Understand when Jeanine Pirro goes on Fox and rallies people to think hijabs are threatening, it leads to this. Folks who imply we're bad for politics, the party, the country, etc., have no idea the threats we deal with because of that kind of language. Talk policy, not personal."
And I just want to almost separate what I'm about to say, even specifically from Ilhan Omar, but just go back to Jeanine Pirro and the fact that she's not called a judge for play. It's not just like a TV talking point or a cutesy name because of the alliteration with Jeanine. She was actually a judge. And think about like what she just said and then put that, mix that with the Sixth Amendment. And those, they don't go together. I can't imagine a judge who believes that and who speaks like that giving any Muslim person who stands in front of her in court fair trial.
And maybe at that point she wasn't on Fox, so
this
we didn't know about it as much.
This is her second job.
Like, exactly,
this is new. She was a judge.
Yeah, and she, like as we always joke about, she's apparently like trying out to be a part of the administration. She had power as a judge. Now she's doing opinion. She's shaping people's thoughts, possibly leading them to think that these people are enemies. But she wants back at power. She wants to get back at the administration and be involved in actually deciding what ends up happening in our country. So let's move to, this is a related topic, a weird double standard here. Do you remember when Representative Ilhan Omar got in trouble for saying this? I want to talk about the political influence in this country that says it is okay to push for allegiance to a foreign country. So there, look, she's talking about the influence of foreign money on our politics. And how if you question in any way any particular component of the relationship between the United States and Israel, you are attacked as being anti-American. Now, could she have worded various things she said differently? Possibly. She's apologized for some of the things that she said, the way that she said it, and she's worked since then to bridge the divide with that community, to make sure that they understand that she has their best interests at heart, all of that. But she still is attacked constantly for the things that she said. And what's interesting is that this weekend, that whole dual loyalties thing, which is a trope that has been used to attack Jewish Americans for a long time, came up in an interesting context and is not receiving so much scrutiny, possibly because of the person who said it. And here he is.
I stood with Prime Minister Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu. How is the race going, by the way? How is it? Who's going to win the race? Tell me. I don't know. Well, it's going to be close. I think it's going to be close. Two good people. But I stood with your prime minister at the White House to recognize Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights. The Golan Heights is something I've been hearing about for a long time.
Yeah, he's heard about it for a long time. He's learned absolutely nothing. He knows about as much about it as I do. So what he said there, I understand it might be a little bit confusing. He said, your prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, your prime minister. He was talking with a group of Jewish Republicans. They are American citizens. They're not Israelis. He's not their prime minister. He's their president, and that is its own embarrassment for them.
Right.
But they are American citizens, and he is implying that Benjamin Netanyahu is their leader here. That is a far more stark portrayal of dual allegiance or some sort of split loyalty than anything Ilhan Omar said. He implied that they specifically are under the rule and power of Benjamin Netanyahu.
Right, Americans don't have a prime minister. It's not how our politics work.
Well, in his defense, he may not know that.
Right,
but he should know that Benjamin Netanyahu isn't the prime minister.
But also, like this person who, I mean, likes to pretend as if he's president of the world, just sort of gave up his power to a group of people, like in this effort to seek attention.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the number's everywhere.
Yeah.
So that's not even what you want.
Yeah, those are your people. First, and they're Republicans. They're your voters.
And they're cheering you on.
Exactly.
And you just essentially said, like, I don't represent you, just to be like, hey, I like your boy. You know, your boy over there. Which is so ignorant to the fact that there are Jewish people everywhere.
Yeah.
Not even just a group of Americans that he's talking to.
And that Benjamin Netanyahu is a politician in Israel in a very close race. It's coming up tomorrow. We have no idea who's going to win because it's so close, implying that people support different leaders in Israel. And just because, and by the way, that goes for people in Israel. I would imagine the people in America might have even more nuanced and diverse ideas about politically what should happen in a different country. But for him, it's all washed away. They may be Americans. They may, have American citizenship. They may be part of the Republican Party. But to him, fundamentally, they're still Israelis. And that was not a one-time comment from him. He also, later in his address to that same group, he referred a second time to American Jews as if they were Israelis by saying that a victory for Democrats in the 2020 election, quote, would cripple our country and very well could leave Israel out there all by yourselves. Not themselves, yourselves. And Nathan Gutman noted, Trump at RJC keeps talking about, quote, some of your people and many of your people when discussing business and tariffs, which apparently Jews somehow have a special interest in. And he has made those sorts of comments before, underlying not just the dual allegiance trope, but also tropes about finance and loans and all of that. Now, he has received some pushback for these comments. His remarks earned him a rebuke from the head of the Anti-Defamation League, Jonathan Greenblatt, who urged the president, quote, to avoid language that leads people to believe Jews aren't loyal Americans. And so that's a responsible person who is worried about these tropes continuing to be spread or the loyalties of American citizens being questioned in this subversive sort of way. But is he receiving anything, even 1% the response that Ilhan Omar did? And remember, she's a congresswoman, brand new congresswoman at that time. And it was the biggest news story of the week. They had a debate on the floor of the House about it. She was rebuked. It was a huge thing. He's the president of the United States. He's the most powerful person in the world. And his comments are considered, it's like Jimmy the three-year-old. You never know what he's going to say. That's the level of seriousness that his remarks are treated with.
Thank goodness.
Well, maybe, but I would say that if you are going to, if you're going to take what she said so seriously, maybe have just a little bit of consistency and hold him to something like the same standards that you'd hold Ilhan Omar to. But of course, they're not, and we understand exactly why, because it wasn't about what he said or what she said. It's about who he is and who she is. Mm-hmm. And she, as you pointed out, is a black Muslim woman. And that is why, because she is the way she is. She was born the way she was born. She wears the hijab that she does. She is always going to be questioned in a way that Donald Trump never will be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what's fascinating to me also, it was kind of an eye-opener. And this is not, I'm not saying anything about like, was he guilty, was he not? But I've been watching the case of Adnan Syed mm-hmm. on HBO, and I did not mm-hmm. listen to Serial. And it was something, I think it's his cousin who's kind of been like fighting for his case, like behind the scenes. She's in the documentary and she's talking about his trial. When he was a teenager. And, you know, she's like basically almost like pointed out that just her life as a Muslim woman and their lives as a Muslim family, that the conversations that we have now about Muslims didn't start yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like that they faced the same type of discrimination, you know, 20 years ago. He's been in prison for 20 years.
Yeah.
And kind of pointing out examples of how that... what am I trying to say? Like how that, you know, casts a shadow over the trial.
Even back then.
Even back then.
Yeah.
Right. And so it is, you know, fascinating that, you know, for her, this is Monday.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
And there's an interesting parallel there. If you are Muslim American, you're Muslim and you're an American. Mm-hmm. Okay. And nobody gets to question your devotion to the country that you chose to come to. The same for Jewish Americans. Yeah, they're Jewish and they're American. And they can have whatever views they want to have about the politics of America or any other country. And we don't get to question whether they're sufficiently American in the way that Donald Trump so blatantly did there. Yeah. These are our country people. These are our people, and we should treat them that way. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We come back, more to get to after this. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Just a little bit of time remaining. I want to talk about something a little bit fun, a little bit controversial. Bernie Sanders recently was asked a question at one of his town hall meetings mm-hmm. about whether we should allow not only people who have like former felons who have paid their debt to society to vote, which is for some reason a controversial thing in America, but for people to be able to vote while in prison. And this is what he had to say. He said, I think that is absolutely the direction we should go. In my state, what we do is separate. You're paying a price, you committed a crime, you're in jail. That's bad. But you're still living in American society and you have a right to vote. I believe in that. Yes, I do. And of course, his state and Maine do allow people in prison to vote now, not as a hypothetical at some point. They allow the practice right now. And he believes we should move in the direction of allowing them to do that in other states as well. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's great. I think as the country with the largest percentage of incarcerated people.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who would be able to vote, and it would be easy to get them to the polls because.
Yeah, you set it up there, I guess.
But no, and I don't want to sound like I'm joking, but it would be a lot of people who would easily, I guess, somewhat be able to vote. And actually, you know, I can't even say easily because there are a lot of things that should be easier in prison mm-hmm. that, depending on who's running the prison, aren't. Mm-hmm. But I'm like seeking like medical care in certain situations. We were talking about a story last week about a man who wanted a blanket he wasn't allergic to. So we don't even know if it would even, you know, what
were they
would
do?
Happen.
They were like going to ban blankets so that they didn't have to give him a blanket?
They fought
like
it
that?
In federal court for years instead of just giving him a cotton blanket. But, you know, I think that what Bernie's touching on here is that you go to prison, you still don't lose your American citizenship. Mm-hmm. And not being able to vote shouldn't be part of a punishment. I don't know. I think the punishment, when you're in court, the punishment is that you go to prison. Mm-hmm. You're locked up away from society. It shouldn't include losing the right to vote.
Yeah.
Are you still 18? Are you still an American citizen?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no necessary reason that would be included. And the issue is that when you are convicted
of a crime. The issue is we lock so many dang black people up.
That's also the issue.
And that is not
but I'm sure
they want to vote.
But the people who are going to respond negatively to this, they don't know
It's
even distribution of society in prison. No, the issue is you get the punishment that we talk about, you're in jail, and then you get the punishment of everything else people think about you. And so the reason I wanted to cover this today is because this is probably going to be on Tucker Carlson tonight.
Right.
He's going to lose his mind. He's going to be triggered by the idea that prisoners although they have committed crimes and need to be locked up for whatever your theory of rehabilitation or whatever is, are still people and still have fundamental human worth and value and deserve respect. And the idea that they should be barred from voting and we shouldn't even have a conversation about it because it should just be so ridiculous. The very idea that they'd be allowed to vote, that is what the right and people like Tucker Carlson will advocate for. In Florida, when they had their big ballot initiative to allow people who had gotten out of prison to vote again, the response from the right was, why would you advocate for these people? Why are you defending their rights? You are supposed to be stigmatized because they are so stigmatized. Mm-hmm. In the same way as people who recently were advocating for sex workers in New York to be able to come out of the shadows. They are supposed to be so dirty philosophically that you should not waste your time to even think about them. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm glad that Bernie Sanders is willing to talk about it, because he will be attacked. He's gonna go on Fox News in like a week to do a town hall, and I guarantee he will be attacked there for being saying that prisoners should be able to vote. If you don't think that they should, if you think that there is some reason why them committing tax fraud or burglary or whatever means they should not be allowed to choose who their president is, then make that argument. But again, this is one of those things that you don't get to just skip. You have to actually make the case.
Also, let's be fair. The people who are in support of not letting felons vote, they're fine with the people who commit tax fraud being allowed
to
vote.
Yeah, that's probably true
prison.
Too. I just said a couple crimes that came to my mind.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the people who were found with one whatever, I don't even know the measurements of like crack cocaine.
Inch.
Is that what it
one
is?
Inch of crack cocaine, yes. Yeah, that's 10 years per inch. I agree. By the way, most of the people who commit tax fraud are not in prison.
Right, there's
probably
that too.
Doing okay. Some of them in the White House, actually. Although we'll never find out because their tax returns are the most secretive thing in the universe. I will gaze into the Ark of the Covenant before I'll see Donald Trump's tax returns. Anyway, good job, Bernie Sanders. Go forward. None of the other candidates have signed on to this. Elizabeth Warren is interested in re-enfranchising felons who've completed their sentence. Others have spoken out possibly in favor of that. Maybe this will start a conversation about people who are currently in prison. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're gonna take a short break. We come back just a little bit more for you after this. Okay, so we find ourselves without enough time to actually cover a story. So let's learn a little bit about
each other.
We're gonna cover each other. Uh-huh. So you had something you wanted to reveal.
Oh yeah, so we're gonna do our all-time favorite TV shows and guilty pleasure TV shows. Okay. Are you ready for this?
I am.
Can you guess?
All-time favorite show?
Uh-huh.
The Wire.
Oh my God, that's right!
No, it is? Yes! I just say that because everybody's favorite all-time show is The Wire.
And
wow. You know, a guy from The Wire is gonna be on the main show today.
Who?
I don't remember.
Lance Riddick.
Lance Riddick.
Stop it.
Yeah. Oh my God, we just blew her mind.
Yes. And stop it. Guilty pleasure TV show, Flavor of Love reruns.
Okay. Oh God.
Okay.
Oh.
Stop. Don't do that.
No.
Don't do that.
Look, when we say guilty pleasure, you're supposed to reveal like kind of a reasonable guilty pleasure.
One of the best TV shows that's ever existed. I'm sorry.
My favorite is not going to surprise anyone.
Okay.
I'm rewatching it right now.
Game of Thrones.
I think it's Game of Thrones.
Okay.
I really like it. I watched The Door again. I bawled at the finale of that episode. I've seen it before. I still bawled. I'm super excited.
You cried?
I did.
Okay.
I did. There's a thing. Oh, here's what you need to learn about me. In TV shows and movies, when someone sacrifices themselves to save other people, I cry.
Okay.
I cry on Independence Day when he flies his jet up into the ship.
Uh-huh.
I cry the entirety of Homeward Bound.
Did you cry in Lion King?
No. I watched it as a kid. I hadn't yet gotten that.
What's your guilty pleasure TV show?
I don't know about my guilty pleasure TV show. Maybe like I've watched Frasier a couple times. There's no reason to watch Frasier anymore.
It's a good show.
But my pleasure that is guilty about TV right now is I've now watched two BBC series that I had no reason to watch. Because Jodie Comer is in them, the actress from Killing Eve. I watch a lot of bad TV. It's not bad.
Bad TV?
No, it's not bad. It's just she's kind of barely even in it, but I still watched it because she's in it.
Have these? Okay,
yeah.
You get in these.
They're good shows. They're good
actresses.
Shows.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, Thursday episode of the Damage Report this week. This is a political news show, a serious look at the news and politics of the country. And Thursday, me and Brad are gonna mostly talk about Game of Thrones. I'm sorry, it's coming back and I wanna talk about it. It's my show, so we're gonna talk about Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And so it's gonna be a lot of fun. Tune in on Thursday. By the way, we've got some new reviews on iTunes. I am gonna be reading them on tomorrow's show, but feel free to slip a couple more in there and we'll read them at the close of tomorrow's episode.
Like, have you ever watched an episode of Flavor of Love? Because it's
no, I actually okay, haven't. You think I should?
I do, yeah.
Okay, maybe I will.
Maybe we'll pull one up on YouTube maybe if you haven't seen it.
Okay. We'll see about that. Anyway, thank you for joining us. Always good to have you on. Thank you, everybody who's watching, and we will see you tomorrow with a lot more.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.